From Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine on New York State government and politics. Your host is Don Decker, with commentary by political scientist Dr. Alan Shartok. Hello and welcome to the Legislative Gazette. I'm Dave Gilletley, filling in this week for Don Decker. Coming up on this week's show, the Empire State's budget situation looks grimmer and grimmer. We'll tell you about that. Also, New York's chief executive shares his thoughts on this week's special assembly elections. And our political analyst, Dr. Alan Shartok, will be joined by the New York Post's Fred Dicker for a political potpourri. All that and more coming up on this week's Legislative Gazette. Three state assembly seats were filled in special elections Tuesday that will have little effect on the makeup of the chamber, but some say it could be pivotal in overriding Governor Cuomo's death penalty veto. All three winners favor the death penalty. In Suffolk County, Democrat William Bianchi won against political novice Republican Felix Grucci. The victory marks a political comeback for Bianchi, who was ousted in 1988 from the seat he held for 15 years. In the assembly race in Nassau County, Republican Michael Balboni beat Democrat Joseph Galante. And in Orange and Rockland counties, Republican John Bonesic was the winner of three candidates vying for the seat vacated by Democrat Mary McPhillips. The outcome of the elections did not change control of the assembly, which the Democrats firmly control, 91-56. Some say, however, it could affect the assembly's ability to override the governor's annual veto of death penalty legislation. Such an override is similarly up for grabs in the state Senate. Our political analyst, Dr. Alan Shartok, spoke with the governor about a possible override. Cuomo says he doesn't see any change.
I think it just puts it back to where it was a year or so ago. Isn't that so? I mean, Kemp Hannon's seat. Kemp was for the death penalty.
He became a state senator.
All right, yeah. So that hasn't, as of a year ago, there's no change. Bianchi's back. He's always been for the death penalty. And what was the third one? I'm sorry. Oh, the Mary McPhillips.
Right.
Mary was for the death penalty. So this is back to where it was a year ago. I don't see that it makes any difference.
So that would be two things the paper got wrong because...
Well, no, I don't know what the paper said.
Yeah.
And I know is that the three seats a year ago were for the death penalty. Now, and I think the person that Bianchi in Suffolk replaced was for the death penalty. The person who replaced Kemp Hannon... No change there. So I don't know what the change is. I think maybe what they're thinking of is if the Democrat had won in the Orange County race,
right.
Penny Olson,
right.
Then there would have been one less vote for the death penalty because she's anti-death penalty.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been the change, but I don't think there is any change this way.
Okay, now, Gov, apparently the irony of this, and maybe I'm using that word incorrectly, is that that it is switched from the Democratic Assembly to the Senate, where the action sort of is, and there's a question as to whether Mr. Donovan from Utica is going to vote one way or another, and he could be the swing vote, and last year he did not go along with the death penalty and the override. What about this year? Have you talked to him? I know you did last year.
No, I have not spoken to him this year. I know he did not vote on the death penalty this year. He was not on the floor for the vote. I don't know where they are. There's another question, however, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
First, let's remind people
right. That
the way this system works is that the Assembly and the Senate vote. If they get 51% in most bills, practically all of them, then the bill comes to the governor, and he's required to vote. If the governor votes with the dissent, with the minority, with the people who are opposed to the bill, then the bill goes back to the Senate and the Assembly. And they need a two-thirds vote to get it passed. So the governor's veto, so-called, only lifts the bar a little bit higher. And says, now you have to get more votes to get this bill passed. If you get the two-thirds vote, the governor becomes irrelevant and the bill becomes law. There is no death penalty because you were never able to get two-thirds of the vote. That's not a lot to ask, it seems to me, if you're going back to death, and if it's as controversial as this has been over our history, and if most civilized, industrialized nations have given it up, as they have, it doesn't seem like a lot to ask for a two-thirds vote. They've never gotten it. There is another question. For all this time that you have not gotten the two-thirds vote for the death penalty, the whole state, overwhelmingly at least, appears to agree that you need something tougher than the present law for punishment for homicide that we call first-degree murder in the old days and deliberate egregious homicide. Something tougher. I have proposed life imprisonment without parole. No parole under any circumstance. Person goes away forever. Some people say, well, that's expensive. Cheaper than the death penalty if you're concerned about such things.
New York Governor Mario Cuomo speaking with our political analyst, Dr. Alan Chartok. Dramatic steps must be taken to stop New York State's slide toward a fiscal crisis. That, according to many politicians and financial analysts, their remarks come after continuing bad news about the state's revenue estimates. Inga Sarda reports.
The signs of New York's worsening financial situation are written on the wall, at least according to many politicians and financial experts. Last week, we told you the governor announced New York's budget shortfall for the current fiscal year had grown by $300 million to more than $1 billion. Meanwhile, New York's accumulated deficit is now expected to reach $5 billion, a record high. The growing gap between state revenues and expenses is partly a result of a sharp and unexpected downturn in the state's economy, but many feel the governor is partly to blame for his overly optimistic revenue projections. Since Cuomo took office in 1983, spending has grown on average at a rate which well exceeds the rate of inflation. During the mid-80s, the state economy was so strong it led to the enactment of a four-year income tax cut, but the downturn coupled with the tax cut has left the state high and dry. And even though Cuomo's current budget plan includes tax increases and budget cuts, many say it will not fix the structural imbalance in the budget. Hyman Grossman is chairman of Standard & Poor's New York rating team. The investment rating firm has given the state a negative outlook on its credit.
The governor's budget then in the general fund, which is growing at the inflation rate, is not the complete story. Total spending is growing at almost twice the inflation rate, while revenues in their natural state, so to speak, are growing in New York State at less than the inflation rate. That is what we mean, and that's what the governor means, but doesn't follow up on when he discusses a structural imbalance in the budget picture. Structural imbalance is when your spending year in and year out is outstripping your ongoing resources. The only way to bridge that gap is to further restrain the spending side and or raise revenues. And by raising revenues, I mean the revenues have to be raised to meet recurring spending.
According to financial analysts, although the governor has proposed major tax increases and budget cuts in his recently unveiled budget, many say it just won't be enough. Last week, Cuomo lowered his revenue estimates for the upcoming fiscal year by $250 million, leaving a huge hole in the spending plan. Many are also beginning to question whether Cuomo's budget relies too heavily on reserve funds and refinancing deals, which may eventually harm the state. Meanwhile, to meet expenses through the end of the year, the state is issuing hundreds of millions of dollars in deficit notes, more than ever before. Some are also saying New York could end the current fiscal year in record financial trouble. New York State Lieutenant Governor Stan Lundeen.
Well, I don't know that it's record trouble, but we will have to issue about $660 million in deficit notes. That means that during the course of this fiscal year, our spending didn't go up appreciably over what we budgeted and recommended, but our revenues went down by more than we anticipated they would. Particularly things like real estate gains have gone down. And so when the revenues haven't come in, we've cut during the year what we can out of expenditures. Obviously, during the year, you can't levy any more taxes. What we have to do in the straightforward, the way of greatest integrity to deal with this is you issue deficit notes, you borrow that money, and then you pay them back right after the first of the next fiscal year. To do that, that means you either have to levy more taxes or cut more spending for the next fiscal year. And it means that our problem is twice as bad, roughly, as we had projected it to be when we did the executive budget.
Cuomo has also called for canceling the final year of New York's planned income tax cut. Grossman says at this point, this won't solve the problem.
The state has to face the fact that it probably gave back too much in 1987 when it not only returned the windfall, but reduced the state tax structure even further, and therefore impacting revenues negatively without impacting the spending pattern to the same extent.
Could you spell out what lies ahead if New York's credit rating is lowered?
Well, we don't buy or sell bonds. Those who put prices on bonds will react in their own fashion, likely by asking for higher interest costs on any new issues coming out.
Meanwhile, the threat of New York's credit rating being lowered has many concerned, including Lieutenant Governor Stan Lundeen.
Well, it is. Last year, after the budget was completed, our credit ratings went up, and we saved money in borrowing costs. We are very concerned with the attitude of the raters, and the governor has met personally with Standard & Poor's regarding their attitudes. What kind of things are they looking for to signal integrity in our budget making? Because we want those interest rates to remain constant or to go down. We don't want them to go up because a rater says they have little confidence in New York's budget discipline.
New York State Lieutenant Governor Stan Lundeen. Standard & Poor's officials say New York must somehow institute recurring revenues that will address the structural imbalance of the budget. And they say the state must bring expenditures into line with its lower revenue receipts. The state's financial decline could hardly come at a worse time. The end of New York's four-year political cycle. This year is, of course, a re-election year for the governor, the state comptroller, and all 211 lawmakers. A time when no one wants to say no to the needs of constituents. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Inga Sarda.
Meanwhile, New York's largest business lobby says the state could solve its fiscal problems by following its recommendations. The State Business Council this week recommended steps it says would save New York more than $3 billion in the next two budget years. And the lobbying group says its plan would balance New York's books without any delay if New Yorkers promised income tax cut. Inga Sarda spoke with the Business Council's Bob Ward about the plan.
Well, one of the largest changes that we're proposing is restructuring the state Medicaid program so that it is more like a private health insurance plan. Right now, most people who have private health insurance coverage do not have the same types of freedom in terms of looking for different providers that Medicaid recipients have. Most people who have private health care either have to make co-payments for any care that they have, or else they are involved in a health maintenance organization, an HMO, or a preferred provider organization, so that there are limits as to what doctors they can go to or what kinds of care they can seek in hospitals and so on. So we think that if the Medicaid system had those kinds of management rules, that number one, it would reduce the cost by about $300 million a year, and number two, it would encourage more preventive and primary care so that people on Medicaid would actually get better health care than they're getting now.
The council also recommended eliminating 12 state agencies.
Yes, we proposed, in most cases, merging agencies into other agencies that have similar purposes so that you could eliminate most or all of the administrative overhead. A good example of that is the State Council on the Arts. Right now, the council has a budget of about $50 million, and about 10% of that goes strictly for administration. So we think that if the council's administrative operations could be merged into the Department of Economic Development, then we could still have the various grants programs operating and save ourselves quite a chunk of money in administration.
Also, merging SUNY and CUNY.
Yes, we believe that, once again, there is an opportunity to eliminate some administrative activities that are by and large very repetitive and duplicate each other. We believe that both of those very large organizations have a lot of administrative bureaucracy that doesn't really do much to educate anyone, and we think that if that could be eliminated and save the taxpayers a lot of money.
Now, of course, these proposals being passed, a lot of them, it's a long shot, don't you agree?
Well, some of these things are no doubt controversial. On the other hand, we know that the state's current budget situation is an unusual one. Not only is that not only does the state have a lot of fiscal problems, but the governor, Cuomo, has proposed a budget that essentially is a two-year budget plan. Usually the state adopts a budget 1 year at a time, but this year the governor has proposed a number of new taxes that would take effect over 2 years. So we're almost going to a two-year budget cycle. So we think that before we lock in any major spending increases and or tax increases for a period that would be well into the 1990s, we should sit back and take a real serious look at whether we need some of the expenditures that we're making right now.
Bob Ward of the Business Council of New York State. He admits many of the points of the plan are controversial and says it would most likely take a miracle for all or even most of the measures to be approved. Joining us once again on the Legislative Gazette is our political analyst, Dr. Alan Shartok. He spoke with New York Post investigative editor Fred Dicker about the state's fiscal woes.
Yeah, well, I've seen a lot of stories that we are approaching major fiscal crisis, Standard & Poor's concerned, and all the rest of it. What's that all about?
Alan, there's no question about it. You know, both you and I have been around the state government for more than a decade, watching it carefully, and I think you'd agree with me when I say that this is the worst financial situation pickle that I've seen. By most accounts, it's as bad, and perhaps even worse, if you listen to financiers like Felix Rowetten, than the great fiscal crisis of 1975-1976. Simply, the state is right now spending a lot more than it's able to take in, and it's reaching a point of exhausting its ability to tax more immediately.
Well, wait a second. That's an assumption on your part, right?
Yeah, but it's an assumption on a lot of people's parts. The governor, for instance, last week, Alan, as we both know, said he had just realized that there's an even bigger hole in the budget than he thought, about $320 million for the next month or so, and he ruled out any new taxes, as he did for next year. He's already proposed almost $1 billion in new taxes, and he said he's not proposing any more because he just has run out of ideas for taxes, and therefore he said, and this is a liberal Democratic governor, he said he's going to try to cut spending by an additional $250 million next year. So it's not just me who views it that way. The governor does as well.
Now, to be fair about this, Fred, this is what he says is this is a regional problem.
No question. And by all indications, and someone like yourself who lives in Massachusetts, I think, has real first-hand knowledge of this.
A state which could go bankrupt.
Yes, but it is a regional problem. Yes. But different states handle it differently, and different states have the problems to greater or lesser severity. I think it's fair to say that Massachusetts has a problem far more severe than New York, and right now it looks like New Jersey has a problem less severe than New York. So it depends on how you approach it. The Republican critics of the governor, Allen, as I'm sure you know, say that while all these other states in the Northeast are cutting back on spending or holding the line on spending, New York is unique, or Governor Cuomo is unique, in seeking to once again increase spending and increase it substantially at a time when the state's revenue pool is starting to dry up.
Well, of course, New York may have unique problems. I mean, after all, it's a huge place. It's got one of the biggest cities in the world. It's got incredible in-migration problems.
No question. But you have a classic liberal assumption, if you'll allow me,
sure.
And that is if by just spending extra money, somehow these problems are going to be solved. And we both know that over the last few years, New York has made Herculean efforts to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on the problems of the homeless, and we have more homeless. Hundreds of millions of extra dollars has been spent on medical services, and the cost keeps going up and up.
But
the problems don't seem to be being addressed, you know, significantly.
Well, I agree with you. But second of all, I have a problem in that I'm getting letter after letter here at public radio from doctors who, for some reason, and think I have the governor's ear, and who are saying...
We all know you have the governor's ear, Alan.
Yeah, right. We're dying over here. We're dying with the Medicaid reimbursement rates. Now,
it's
Medicaid
true.
Is one of our biggest problems in terms of throwing money. You know, and these poor doctors are getting $11 a visit, and they're being told they can't have any medical tests and protect themselves with malpractice and everything else. And so what's happening is somebody's getting caught in the squeeze.
Alan, the six major hospitals in New York City are facing bankruptcy. The next time you have your esteemed and respected friend, Dr. David Axelrod, the state health commissioner,
on your mind too, I thought. No.
Well, I think very, very highly of him. Oh. There's no question about it. But you know, the state's medical system is on the brink of collapse, especially downstate. We have an assortment of problems that I don't think most people can, you know, fully appreciate. But they're so broad and so deep that it's fair to say the early 1990s, anyway, are going to be times of very, very difficult trouble and problems for New York.
See, what I've always liked about Mario Cuomo, as opposed to some of his critics, is that I've always felt that he sees all of this stuff. stuff, and I think his constituency does too, as problems to be solved and not to be run from. I mean,
that's his rhetoric. The question is, do you believe the rhetoric? More and more, he's been saying it's up to Washington to solve them, and that he can't do it in Albany.
Well, I think
he's been passing the buck quite a bit.
No, I think it's not a question of buck passing. I think it's a question of motivating people to do what they need to do. Hey, Fred,
could it be the two?
Yeah, it could be a little bit, maybe. Well, let me put it this way.
He is a politician now, and he isn't, Socrates.
No, I don't think he's Socrates. Let me ask you this question here, Fred. You wrote a column recently which said that Patrick Barrett, the fellow who's the head of the Republican Party in the state, is now saying that it may be impossible to find the right person to run against Mario Cuomo.
You mean Pat Barrett's throwing in the towel column?
That's right. That's the one, right.
Well, I mean, they're not stupid. They're facing the reality that you and I have been speaking about for some time. It's a twin reality, really. One, Governor Cuomo, notwithstanding the state's financial problems, is still riding tremendously high in the polls. He's a very popular governor. And number two, the Republicans haven't been able to find somebody, a qualified candidate, to throw up against the governor. And there's an old axiom in politics, you can't beat somebody with nobody. Cuomo clearly is a somebody, and the Republicans, it seems ever increasingly clear, don't have anybody to run against them. So Pat Barrett, I think, wisely is saying now that the number one priority for state Republicans is keeping control of the state Senate, not defeating Governor Cuomo.
Okay, let's go to that for a second, because we've discussed it before, but I don't think most of our listeners are fully aware of just the kind of power that a change in the Senate from the Republicans to the Democrats would represent. Let's talk about that for a second.
Alan, you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, we do have a system of government that allows the legislature to check the governor. And in fact, when one branch of the legislature, as it is now, is in the hands of the opposition party, the Republicans, they can block, the opposition party can block most of, if not virtually all, of the governor's legislative initiatives. That means a variety of things. It means, kind of on a very practical political level, they have loads of patronage jobs, maybe 3,000 jobs to hand out in the state Senate. On a more immediate level, they have the ability to take care of certain special interest groups that may not like some of the governor's proposals, and that means when they take care of those special interest groups, they get contributions that help them stay in power. It means they can act on their ideological persuasion, assuming they have that, to try to make the case for a Republican platform and stand up to the governor on that. And finally, as we both know, it means that they'll have a key role in redrafting the legislative district lines for Congress and the State Assembly and Senate, which take place, the redistricting takes place every 10 years, and that means next year after the federal census in 1991, that redistricting takes place. If the Republicans stay in power, they can make sure the lines are gerrymandered, to use an honorable old term named for, I believe, a New York governor, Governor Jerry, to make sure that the lines keep them in power. If they lose power, conversely, chances are the Republicans are going to be out of power for many, many years to come, as we see in the Congress now, where the Republicans have virtually no chance of taking over the Congress, largely because the Democrats have drawn the district lines in a way that don't give the Republicans much of a chance.
Fred Dicker of the New York Post, speaking with political analyst Dr. Alan Shartok. The state legislature's annual Black and Puerto Rican caucus gathering was recently held with more than 3,000 people in attendance. The two-day meeting gives people a chance to discuss issues crucial to minority populations in New York. Bruce Robertson spoke with the founder of the caucus.
New York's chief executive was among those who addressed the annual gathering. Governor Cuomo admitted that New York has done a poor job at teaching minority students about their cultures, and he vowed to follow through on the state's recently approved plan to broaden its history curriculum to include more study of minority cultures. Assembly Deputy Speaker Arthur Eve, a Buffalo Democrat, founded the caucus more than 10 years ago. He says one of the remaining major issues is the welfare of minority women, children, and families in New York.
Regardless of what the workshop was, even if it was on housing, the large number of homeless people in this state who are African American and Latino, and the high percentage of them who are children in this state. And so even when you talked about the criminal justice system, they talked about the 50% of the prison population being African American and 30% being Latino, when we're only 25% of the state's population, but we're 80% of those incarcerated. And again, that reflects back to our children, and they're having a decent education, a decent environment. And so I think the concluding speakers in their remarks really focused on where the major emphasis of our Black and Puerto Rican caucus is going to have to be, and where the state's going to have to focus more on. And that is our children. and the families in New York State who are the most vulnerable.
And what impact will the state's budget deficit have?
Well, certainly a lot of what we will have to do is to provide resources, but also with existing resources and having them spent more equitable and having them targeted to the most vulnerable population, that if we don't do it, the numbers are going to increase tremendously with teen pregnancy, with welfare costs, with criminal justice, with AIDS almost destroying our health systems in New York City. And so we're going to have to understand that if we don't do the right thing on the front end, it's going to cost us 10 times, 100 times on the back end.
Eve says one of the right things to do is to defer or eliminate entirely the final phase of New York's planned income tax cut. Eve says he has always been opposed to that measure, saying that since the cut was implemented, the rich have gotten richer, the poor have gotten poorer. And he says if the state does not do its job to improve the status of minorities now, everyone will pay in the future.
You have to understand that in the year 2000, white men will represent only 20% of those coming into the job markets. It will be minority and women who will represent in this state 80%. And four out of every new births in this state will be black and Puerto Rican in the year 2000. So the question is, what do we do? Are we going to ensure that we have a healthy, productive future, or are we today going to put our children and grandchildren in such a horrible situation that the system will collapse? And we're leaving a tremendous burden to those who will follow us today and tomorrow. And so I'm in hopes that, one, the national leadership will understand that we cannot keep making the rich richer and the poor poorer and squeezing the middle income. And we've got to have a fair distribution of the resources of this nation, and people are going to have to pay more taxes who make more money, make the most money. They're going to have to pay more, and corporations are going to have to pay more. And I just hope that we will realize that the minority population and the poorer people of this state, we cannot afford to lose anyone for the future. And so we will just have to do more.
Assemblyman Arthur Eve, Deputy Speaker and founder of the Black and Puerto Rican Legislative Caucus. For the Legislative Gazette, this is Bruce Robertson.
And that does it for this week's Legislative Gazette, the program produced by Inga Sarda with technical assistance from Phil Sluzars. The program is made possible with grants from the Legislative Gazette, the newspaper about state government. Subscription information available at 518-473-6482. And Empire Information Services, serving New York and New England with electronic news release distribution. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Gallitli, filling in this week for Don Decker.